This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Among the first books that I wrote is another book called The Evolution of Fiqh. Here is the original design of the cover, which I made. I designed the cover myself and published it myself, as I did for The Fundamentals of Tawheed. This is the new version. This is the hardback, softback from International Islamic Publishing House in Riyadh. They print it with this cover. In terms of the reason, as I explained before, there are reasons behind basically all of the books that I wrote. A need and necessity. I had found myself in a state of confusion regarding what really represented Islamic law or Sharia or Islam as a whole. Where are we supposed to get it from? Because when I first accepted Islam, I was eager to gain as much knowledge as I could about Islam. Now, I accepted Islam in 1972 in Toronto. And at that time, there were a few immigrants there with me, some Egyptians, some from Bangladesh, from India, from Pakistan. And I was getting information from each one of the born Muslims who attended the masjid, Bausted Avenue Masjid, at that time. But the knowledge was, and the information was somewhat vague because they were not scholars, they were not learned. Then I was given the opportunity to go to the UK. I was told by brothers from Jamaat Tabligh that in the UK there are over 50 mosques, and every mosque has a Maulana who has studied Islam, he's a scholar, you can go and learn from them. So I went for the first ijtima or conference held in the West in Sheffield, England. And while I was there, I spent 4 months there. While I was there, I went from masjid to masjid around the country, sitting with the scholars there and collecting information about Islam, understanding Islam. Because very few books were available, very little, very little. So what happened was that, you know, the scholars I was dealing with there, the Maulanas, they taught basically on the question answer way. I would ask them about a particular question, then they would give me the answer. Yes, no, possibly, or whatever. So I kept notebooks with me and I recorded all that information. When I returned back to Canada, after spending the 4 months there in the UK, studying with brothers from the Jamaat Tabligh, learning basic Arabic reading of the Quran from them. In particular, we had Colonel Amir al-Din, who was the leader for the Jamaat Tabligh in North America. And I became like his sidekick. I became his protege. He was tutoring me. I stayed with him, learned from him. He helped me with the reading of the Quran, with proper tajweed, etc., etc. Anyway, after returning to Canada, I moved with my wife next door to the mosque in the East End of Toronto, the East End Mosque. And there the Imam was an Egyptian who had learned, done studies. He was not like a qualified, didn't have the status of sheikh or doctor or whatever, but he had learned, studied in circles, etc., focusing mainly on fiqh sunnah. Now, the material which I studied in the UK under the Maulanas really didn't, it wasn't sourced. There was no indicator of where it came from, etc. It was just the Prophet ﷺ did, didn't do, whatever, do, don't do, etc. Whereas in the case of Fiqh Sunnah, the Imam there was teaching me privately based on hadith with referencing where it came from, positions of scholars on it, etc. And I started to see differences. Then I made friends with people from Morocco. So Moroccans had emigrated to Toronto. And I found them praying with their hands by their sides instead of clasping their hands either on the chest area as the Shafi'i practice. And the Imam from the East End Mosque was teaching that. And or, you know, under the navel as the Jamaat Tabligh Maulanas were teaching. So this created some confusion for me. So which one is right? This is when all the madhahib, all of the schools of Islamic thought were correct. I should mention that while I was in the UK, I was told that there also, that they're all correct. But you must follow one. Otherwise, your imam would be shaitan. So you had to follow one. As a result, one had to be chosen, you know. And when I asked them, what did they think? What is the best? What's the advice as to which one is best? They said to me, well, you know, Abu Hanifa was Imam-i Azam, the greatest imam. That's the title that they gave him. And, you know, he was the first. And most Muslims in the world are Hanafis. So perhaps that's best. So I said, okay, fine. I'll become a Hanafi. And I learned the special Hanafi prayer for women so I could teach it to my wife when I went back to Toronto. So now, when I found this discrepancy between the Moroccans, the Egyptians, and the subcontinent Indo-Pakistanis in prayer, and they're saying it's all right, all of them were right, you know, the Prophet ﷺ did all of them or whatever, I could sort of understand that. But when I was told by the Imam of the East End Mosque, you know, in the Fiqh Sunnah studies that I had with him, that if a man, when we're looking at what they call Nawaqid al-Wudu, the things which nullify or break one's state of purity gained by wudu, the ablutions, they explain that among the things which nullifies wudu, other than urinating, defecating, farting, etc., they said is if you touch a woman. Okay, you touch a woman, then your wudu is broken. But then, when I went back to my notes from the Hanafi scholars of the Jamaat Tabligh, they said, when you touch a woman, your wudu is not broken. So now I was caught. Because while the Prophet ﷺ, according to their explanations, may have prayed with his hands below his navel, on his chest, and then by his sides, though he may have done that, and that's conceivable, whether that's actually factually true or not, that's another story, but that's still conceivable that the Prophet ﷺ could have done different things at different times. But when it now came to the state, the issue of being in a state of wudu, and not being in a state of wudu, it can't happen at the same time. They can't both be correct. These were contradictory differences. The others we could call variational differences. How he placed his feet in the prayer, where he raised his hands, whether it was this high or whatever. But this one of having wudu or not having wudu now became problematic. There was no explanation for that. So then I realized I needed to go and study Islam from the sources. Scholarships became available to go and study in Medina. So I set off along with a close colleague of mine, Dr. Abdullah Hakim Quick, who in fact was among the people who gave me Shahada. I accepted Islam at his hand. We both went to study in Medina. Actually, he went ahead of me by 6 months or something like this. After studying there, it became clear to me that, in fact, there was right and wrong in this matter about having wudu or not having wudu and a number of other differences that existed that couldn't coexist among the various schools of thought. So that clarity came to me. And whilst I was in Riyadh doing my master's, I took a course in Tariq al-Tashri'. Tariq al-Tashri', or the history of legislation. And in the course of it, we studied the madhabs, the different schools, in much more details, how they evolved, how they developed, the different opinions which were held by the scholars, etc., etc., why they held these different opinions, their evidences, and all these other kinds of things. This class was very elucidating to me. It opened my eyes. And I could finally understand, this is on the master's level, it's a course which they gave on the master's level. Though in my mind I felt this is something we should be getting on the bachelor's level to get that clarity. But anyway, the point is that after studying that course, I felt that this knowledge needed to be shared. So this led me to write the book, The Evolution of Fiqh. I wrote it at the same time that I wrote the book on the fundamentals of Tawheed. And this book I sent to Muslim publishing institutions, main one in the UK. I sent it to them. They said they wanted to have their scholars look it over and give the okay for publication. So they looked it over and then they told me they wanted me to change a variety of things. When I looked at the changes, basically they wanted me to change the approach and the conclusions of the book to match the standard view that all madahibs are equal and they're all correct. So, of course, I couldn't publish it through them because then it was no longer the book which I wanted to write. The manuscript, there's one other point I'd just like to mention. When I gave it to a Pakistani journalist, he was retired actually, he had been a journalist for about 30 years, something like this. He retired in Taif. I asked him to go over it for me, edit it. When he brought it back to me, he had tears in his eyes. I was surprised. Why? His eyes were teary, filled with tears. Some tears had come down his cheek even. I said, why are you crying? What's the reason for? He said, you know, I'm 70 odd years old and I've grown up in Muslim world. People following different schools of thought, etc., etc. And he said, for the first time in my life, I finally understood what the various schools were about, the madahib, for the first time. So, alhamdulillah, that was a great encouragement to me. But I still couldn't find any publisher. And I ended up publishing it myself in the late 80s, along with The Fundamentals of Tawheed. Those were the first two books which I published. It was self-published. As I showed you, I designed the cover. I laid out the pages and everything. Alhamdulillah. Barakallah fikum. And I pray that the work continues to open the eyes of many in the Muslim world who don't understand what the madahib are about and don't understand how they should approach the madahib, the various schools of Islamic law, thought, in order to be comfortably on the straight path without worrying and confused understandings, etc. I do ask Allah to make it among the books which would benefit the Ummah. Some schools, universities, etc. Like I know in southern Philippines, the University of Mindanao, they do use the book as one of the textbooks. And a number of other universities have taken it also as a textbook. Barakallah fikum. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.